Գումտրեք SPS հայերենը։ Հավելյալ հետաքրքրական հաղորդումներ կգտնեք վերկայքին վրա sps.com.au/armenian.
While in recent weeks drought and catastrophic bushfires dominated the headlines, there was also extreme heat in the political arena. I have on the line Dr. Zareh Azaryan, senior lecturer in politics and international relations at Monash University, to give us his viewpoint on the latest in federal politics. Dr. Azaryan, welcome to SBS Armenian.
Hello, Zareh. Thank you so much for having me.
First, a bit about you. When you started your interest in politics and political studies?
I worked for the Victorian Parliament for a period, Zareh, and that's before I started my PhD in political science. I gained my PhD in political science from Monash University, and as you said in your introduction, I am now at Monash University as a senior lecturer in politics and international relations. My teaching and research interests look at Australian politics, but political parties, democracy and public policy generally around the world as well. So it's my pleasure to be with you to discuss politics today.
Let's start with Prime Minister's plans to overhaul the public sector. This will be a major shake-up of the public sector not seen in decades. Is this a cost-saving measure or part of a larger plan?
The government can always reshape the public service as it sees fit, and in the 1980s, the Hawke and Keating governments reformed the public service and created a number of mega departments by merging a number of portfolios together. A similar thing is going on with this reform. The Coalition and the Morrison government is getting on with merging some departments together. So water, for example, with the environment, with the agriculture department. This suggests to us that the government wants to tackle some issues, such as climate change, but wants to use the public services advice to try and find practical solutions. And as we know, especially in New South Wales, Queensland and north of Victoria, farmers, primary producers have been very concerned about water and scarcity of water. So these sorts of portfolio rearrangements, while big, are to be expected by governments that are really grappling with issues to deal with climate change and water. So I suspect that's what is going on. It's more about trying to find policy solutions and ways in which the government may be able to find policy solutions rather than really trying to find cost savings at this stage.
In recent weeks, China became the focus of criticism from the federal government. Are there justified reasons for the government's stance on China?
There's always been some scepticism by Australian governments and Australian politicians when it comes to China. But I think when we look at the broader perspective, very much the Australian government's approach to China has been linked to the policy views of its allies, and in this case, in particular, with US foreign policy. So I think when we look at the question of China, relations really are quite poor between the two countries. Of course, a couple of politicians were blocked from going to China. This isn't such a positive thing. But on the other hand, trade between the two countries is still very strong. And of course, Australia has immense wealth that it can export to China, especially when it comes to primary resources, minerals and metals. So despite the sorts of concerns that politicians from both China and Australia might have about each other, the importance of trade will probably get through these more difficult times.
And does Labor agree on government's China policy?
Usually when it comes to foreign policy, both major parties are together. They stand together. So I don't think that there's too much of a difference between how the parties are approaching the relationship with China. There will be some differences of opinion. There will be some differences at the edges of the debate. But when it comes to the importance of Australia working closely within its region, with its Asian neighbours, and of course in trying to advance the national interest in the Asian region, both parties are pretty similar.
Recently, there were several scandals involving political donations, starting from cash donations to New South Wales ALP headquarters to the city of Casey here in Melbourne. Do you think federal and state laws are adequate to reduce the risk of interest groups buying influence?
The problem that political parties have is that political advertising is allowed in Australia. And I say that because late 1980s, early 1990s, the political parties actually sought to bring about an end to the campaigns that we see today. But this was taken to the High Court, and the High Court ruled that there was an implied freedom of expression, of political communication, and that this campaigning approach, where we see advertising by all political parties on television and in radio and newspapers, must continue on. To have that advertising requires millions and millions of dollars, and the political parties must raise this every year to fund campaigns. We have reports that a local campaign now costs a political party upwards of $200,000 to $250,000. And that's just for not even an ultra-marginal seat. So there's a lot of money that is required to fund campaigns. And political parties will always be on the lookout to see where they can find this sort of money. In recent months and recent years, there have been controversies. I think they do highlight a need. And the general population's view that there needs to be a bit more transparency about how much is being donated and by whom. And I think if these sorts of things can be worked through through policy, but it does require the major parties to agree on that form of policy. At the moment, they're not in agreement, and so I can't see anything changing in the short term about this.
So do we need more transparency about political donations?
I think there's growing momentum that people would like to have a greater idea. And there's always going to be controversy about who donated what amount to which campaign, and usually that's accessible. But in terms of all levels of government, both at the state and federal levels, having that immediate transparency, it doesn't exist at the moment as well as it could be. And I think that's something that a lot of people are calling for. And probably you'd expect before the next election that is something that the government or the major parties will respond to.
You wrote a book about minor parties, the making of a party system, minor parties in the Australian Senate. How minor parties and independents are shaping Australian politics? As we saw in the Medivac bill case, just one independent senator's vote was enough to change the outcome. Or the previous week, One Nation's vote defeated the government's workplace relations reforms.
Minor parties are very important, and in the Australian political system, where we have the House of Representatives and the Senate, minor parties are having great success in winning seats in the Senate. When they are there, their power is enhanced by the fact that the government does not have a majority in the Senate. So they require the support of these independents or minor parties to have that majority they need to pass proposed laws. I think the case of Jackie Lambie and One Nation just reminds us of the important role not only the Senate plays in the Australian system, but in terms of these individuals and how they are able to maximise their capacity to influence national politics. This is an interesting debate because some people will say that what gives one individual the right to block or pass the government's plans? But at the same time, they do have the power to do exactly that, and others would say that they are using this power responsibly and effectively. Generally, when we look at Australian elections over the last 30, 40 years, we see that there has been a growing trend of people voting for non-major party candidates, especially in the Senate. It's now roughly one in three people voting for a non-major party candidate. So this theory has been a shift, not only in terms of the interest ordinary voters have in voting for non-major parties, but also in terms of the types of minor parties that are emerging and contesting seats in the Senate. We now have quite a diverse range of minor parties in Australian politics, the Australian Greens, One Nation, the Lambie movement. So I think when we look back at this period, this is probably the richest period where we have such diversity of views, such diversity of parties, and this probably is a trend that will continue on over the next few elections at least.
And what makes a small party more successful than the others? Because, you know, we've seen some like the Democrats came and went, and some are more successful.
The success for some minor parties is that they are different. They are very different to other parties that exist. And I think when we look back on the Australian Greens, for example, clearly they have an agenda that is about humanitarian concerns, that is about conserving the environment. When we look at One Nation, they have a policy that is concerned about immigration, that is concerned about welfare, that is concerned about foreign policy. So these parties and the range in between them have very specific policy goals that are very different to other political parties' goals. When we look at the Democrats, that lasted for about 30-odd years. The problem for them was that they didn't have a strong policy agenda. In fact, they went into the Senate promising to be an intermediary, a watchdog on the major parties. And by the time of the late 2000s, people had sort of forgotten that the Democrats were performing that role and were now far more interested in supporting the parties that were advancing a strong and specific agenda. So I suspect there's been a change in the appetite in what voters are looking for in minor parties, and they are becoming more attracted to those parties that are advancing a very specific policy agenda.
How next year will shape in Australian politics? What will be the major political battlefields?
Next year is, of course, the first year where we don't have, where we've just gone over the election, so it's the first full year without the election. This is now going to be the period in which we expect the Morrison government to lay out its policy agenda for the next couple of years. You'd expect things to be raised would include industrial relations, but the most urgent issue I think the government has is trying to strengthen the economy, which is progressing, but it is not progressing at the rate that the government would like it to be. So there would be possibly, depending on what the Reserve Bank does, there could be potential increases in spending by the government to just stimulate the economy a bit more. I'd also expect the Labor Party, the opposition, which had for so long expected to be in power this time after the election, to reform itself, to revisit the policies it took it to the last election, and to start thinking about how it might be able to be a competitive force at the next election. So I think 2020 is going to be a very important one for the government in setting its agenda and for the opposition to get itself up and to look forward as to how it might win the next election.
Dr. Zari Ghazaryan, thank you so much for being on the program today, and can't wait to talk with you again in the future.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Our guest was Dr. Zari Ghazaryan, Senior Lecturer in Politics and International Relations at Monash University.
Հավնե, լայք, բաժնեք, գործիկը թայտնել, հետևե SPS հայրենին թիմադեդրի վրա։